Why do we keep remaking old trends? How are we breathing new life into the old? Are we adding something new? If there is no soul, there cannot be life. So, do we cater to the masses, or do we create art only for the few who dare experience it?
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I am your host, Jason Bishop, and of course with me today, as always, is Trish Coughlin.
Hello.
And back from the void is Sam Stepanenko.
And frothing at the mouth.
But you've got that beard to catch it, so
yes.
You're good.
It's getting rather luxurious, actually.
Nice.
Leave him off for 2 weeks and he turns into a freaking hobo.
It's clean, it's tidy.
It is a tidy beard.
I keep it clean. Gets shampooed and conditioned and all that fun stuff that you need to do to take care of a beard so you don't look like a hobo.
Very true. I watched The Caveman's Valentine a little while ago and I'm like, he looks nothing like that, so he's doing good.
Okay.
That's more.
I retract the statement, okay?
Hipster. You can go with hipster because it is kind of hipster-ish, which is a trend that's long gone now.
That is very Sam, though.
I was hipster before hipster was
hip. Oh, yeah. No, Sam was way hipster before hipster.
Well, that's the whole thing about hipster. Eventually, it becomes sincere. Like it or not, hipsters, it'll roll back around, and that irony will no longer be ironic.
And then what?
Then you have
then
to deal with sincerity.
Your lives are meaningless.
Yeah, you have to deal with the reality of your world and who you are inside.
Yeah.
Or you could rage at the world, just like the kind of zombies in Rabid.
Yes. Yeah, zombie, I don't know if I can categorize it
part
as that.
Vampire, part kind of cosmic horror, part zombie movie.
Yes. Yeah. And viral zombies as well.
Viral zombies. But I mean, when they talk about it, like with rabies, a version of rabies, I mean, it is like the saliva. It's in the saliva. So when you get bit by a rabid dog, you got to get the shot. So... I mean, it falls under, like, what it actually sort of does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of, but...
So we're going to be talking about the 1977 David Cronenberg film, and, of course, the very recent 2019 Saska remake of this. This is the Saska twins, I think, debut on our show, as far as talking about them, one of their movies.
It is.
We may have mentioned them in 31 Days of Horror in the past, and we've certainly mentioned their names.
Yeah, no, I've heard, like, when you mentioned it, when I saw their credits, I'm like, I know I've heard of them before, but I was thinking it's definitely a 31 Days of Horror thing.
Well, yeah, for sure. Their body of work isn't huge, but, and some of it's really good, and some of it's...
Not everything is great by every director, and I think some of their earlier work is certainly better than some of their later work. We're going to discuss this one, because this is the latest work.
Mm-hmm. I didn't even know about it until you'd mentioned it. I was like, oh, that's the one that's remade? Wow.
Yeah, and it's so weird, because it was, again, much like Cronenberg's, a Canadian film funded by Canadian funds, and we were the last to get it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, what is up with this?
I don't know.
Yeah, typical.
It's been on through the theaters and VOD in the U.S. Quite some time ago, and we just got it in the theaters a few months ago, and it just hit VOD in Canada. So
it was good timing.
It was definitely good timing.
I was getting a little bit nervous. Like, are we going to be able to cover this one this year?
Yeah, we thought it would be a very good fit for Women of Horror. As soon as we heard about it, we were planning to do it. And it wasn't ready last year, so we had to wait till this year for Women in Horror.
Well, and I think it's fitting specifically because the Saska sisters, the Twisted Twins, are the reason that I became aware of Women in Horror.
Yeah, they're strong proponents of it. They do a lot of short films in support and promotion for Women in Horror, which is a month-long blood drive.
Yes. and celebration of the contributions that women make to horror, reminding people that horror is not a men's genre, it's for everybody.
Exactly. This week we're going to be celebrating women in horror with the Soska twins, as well as next week we'll be picking another film to remake our way that also features women in horror.
Yes. Yay. Like, the tone of these two movies, I can tell there's distinct differences between a male director and female directors.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And I think you can also tell the level of experience to a certain extent as well, because Rabid was Cronenberg's second feature.
Yes, it was.
Right?
And versus, still very raw looking. You know, Cronenberg still hadn't become the craftsman he would later become.
But you could see that
experimental body horror already creeping in, despite the meager $500,000 budget of what they're trying to do. And kind of a commentary on the rising trend of plastic surgery, even in the late 70s.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, and it also, you could sort of see his sort of common themes, his exploration of sexuality.
Yep.
I mean, as you said, body horror, character-driven stories.
Mm-hmm. The typical things you think of with David Cronenberg. Sexuality, as you said, body horror, like gooiness.
Yeah.
It is a gooey, gooey movie.
Yeah.
I was like watching it, and I'm like, before I started, I'm like, oh, I'm a little bit hungry. Halfway through, was not hungry at all. you don't snack during this movie.
No, you definitely do not.
A lot of Cronenberg's you don't want to snack through.
No. He has something in his head, these visuals that translate incredibly well to screen.
Yeah.
However disturbing they might be.
Fleshy.
Yes. Oh, very much so.
And this one's a tame one in comparison.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, there's
some
no question.
Of other ones.
Again, budget.
Budget, yeah. Despite having a producer like Ivan Reitman on here,
yes.
But I guess that would have been fairly early in his career as well.
It was relatively early. I was surprised. Like, I saw his name pop up. I'm like, wow, that's really quite early for Reitman. It's before he actually started directing.
Yeah.
And he's also the music director. I'm like, let's see how far back he goes. And he actually had probably about half a dozen things that he had produced prior to this, and some stuff that had a little more success, I guess is the best way of putting it, in theaters and so on. But I'm glad that he supported Cronenberg to get this horror genius some exposure and get these films made.
Yeah, somebody saw something in Cronenberg as a Canadian filmmaker, something special, a unique voice. You know, his films still resonate today. I mean, we talk about Scanners, and someday we'll either cover it or somebody will beat us to it and remake it. We covered him in episode 101 when we talked about The Fly, and we talked about the Cronenberg very gooey remake.
Yes, very gooey.
And then it keeps going. I mean, you got Videodrome, which I've been tossing around of maybe covering someday, The Dead Zone, Shivers, Crash, Existenz, and Little Outside of the Box with Eastern Promises, but it's still very violent.
And A History of Violence.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
He's done some other ones. And what was the one with the twins?
Dead Ringers.
And I'll bring that up later.
We'll be bringing that up later for sure.
Oh, yeah, no, I saw the nod to it very
That
clearly.
Wasn't a nod. That was a boat nerd, hey, you, we love Cronenberg moment.
Oh, they have a Shivers moment. They have a Dead Ringers moment. Those two I caught for sure.
You can't miss them.
No. That end scene could maybe say Fly, but I was actually leaning a little more towards Annihilation myself.
Yeah.
And, oh, yeah, definitely in more Annihilation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the scene in the alley there was where the chittering and all that stuff felt very Fly-ish to me as well. Mm-hmm. Not quite as obvious, but certainly it felt Fly-ish to me.
Yeah.
Yes.
At times I thought I kind of enjoyed some of the Easter eggs to other Cronenbergs, but as we went along and they kept coming, I'm like, all right, give it a rest.
Well, this might be kind of a long trek to a nod, but I sort of felt, if we're talking The Fly, when she has to use like that syringe to get the serum like into her, that's very Fly, because the whole point I remember in The Fly he has like vomit on stuff and suck it up to get the food. I'm like, yeah, that's sort of Fly-ish.
Yeah, but at the same time, if your jaw is wired shut and you still need to get nutrients,
well, you can. I knew somebody who had gotten into an accident and it broke his jaw, but unlike her, he still had his lips, so he could use a regular straw and do that. He didn't need to inject anything. There was the sort of the difference. She couldn't get any suction because part of her face was missing.
Yes. Yeah. Which looked great.
Oh, that was amazing.
That was good. You could see, like, as far as the practical effects go, that looked really good. Most of the practical effects in the remake were quite good. I mean, there isn't a lot in the original because of the low budget. You basically had that little effect under the arm with something moving.
With the penis that comes out of her armpit.
Yeah, yeah, the Saskas kept that.
Yes, they did. They revealed it much later in the film, but they did keep it. And as they should have. I mean, if you're going to do Cronenberg, you have to keep the things that make Cronenberg Cronenberg sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you're going to remake it, it's got to be, well, I mean, why not do what he did? It's sort of the point of the whole thing was the body horror part of it.
Oh, for sure. The tubes of the things swimming around them that the doctor had, I called them like phallic flukes.
Yes.
Yes. That gross jar.
I kept coming up with names for things in the Saskas remake. There was always this underlying sound as she got hungry, and I called it the hunger storm.
Yes.
Because there was, you almost heard like rolling thunder underlying that, the sound they were making in the soundscape.
My stomach made that noise this morning. I was so hungry because I got up early. By about 10 o'clock, it's like, it's time for lunch.
It's been a while since I've seen his wife.
Uh-oh.
I'm not saying nothing.
Well, I don't know. In these movies, they didn't go really right for the one that's going to bring the cops in right away. And Sam can just walk out of his house. There's plenty of places around here he could find somebody. So I think he...
Yeah. Sadly, I feel like this is a well-timed movie as well with the coronavirus becoming epidemic in China.
Well, did you...
And borders being closed. Like, every time you go to sleep, like, it's much, much worse than it was before.
Yeah.
I just watched a video yesterday, and it was somewhere around 30%. And that was just what they knew about.
Yeah.
And Russia had closed their borders, and France had shut off flights, and I think Israel as well. It's a bad one.
As of this morning, the coronavirus has now claimed more lives than SARS did.
Well, I don't want to get into the politics of it, but China, if you know about something, quit lying about it and take care of it. Get on it quick.
Well, and what I was looking at too, what's really funny, I went to go, like, there's the medical supply place, like, just for people who, like, with walkers and stuff, and I was dealing with my mom's stuff. They're completely out of masks right now. There's tons of places that have no masks.
Yeah, it's like that in the States too. A flimsy little mask isn't going to help you with this, by the way, because it could be airborne. And doctors need those.
Yeah.
So don't hoard these things that the medical profession actually needs.
Oh, and did you catch in the Cronenberg one, there was mention of swine flu?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was quite cool. I'm like going, oh, that's from then.
Yeah, I didn't know.
I didn't know it either.
That was one of those things that I kind of, I didn't know it had been around that long.
Right? Yeah.
So it was one of those things that kind of cycled back around.
Mm-hmm.
And it became a thing again. Yeah, I didn't know it was a thing way back in 1977.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, it's viruses are cyclical, I guess, right? Mm-hmm.
Well, not just that, but here's a fun fact, everybody. Like, I mean, viruses are hard, but you know we talk about, like, vaccinations for stuff? Like, that's the whole thing. The virus never fucking goes away, guys. It just doesn't. It still exists all the time.
Yeah, so hopefully they'll come up with a vaccination for that one. Stay healthy and clean your hands and...
Don't kiss strangers.
Don't kiss strangers. Don't cough in public. Like, just, if you're feeling sick, just stay away from people.
Advice that the people in this movie could have used.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
In both movies, it's like, okay, we know that there's something going around. Yeah. Why are you hanging out in porn theaters? Picking girls up in bars? What?
Oh, but I have one thing to say about several items in this. If you are going to feed and eat something, finish your damn meal. Like, don't leave them alive. Finish your food.
Well,
I know you may be watching your weight, but finish your fucking dinner.
Don't overstuff.
Yeah, and that's an interesting change that the Saska sisters made in their movie, is the doctors were unaware of what they had done with Rose in the first movie, or in Cronenberg's movie, whereas he was completely aware of it. Spoilers, by the way. So if you've not seen this, I should have said that before I said what I just said. But
I mean, come on. Anybody who's listening to our show at this point knows to watch the movie first or doesn't care about the spoilers.
Yes. We're going to talk about the movie.
It. Yes.
What's the point?
Yeah. But yeah, I liked that change. That's one of the things I do have to say about the Saska Sisters remake, is they kept the basic elements, but they did something that was their own.
Absolutely.
Mostly.
There was commentaries in theirs that were a little different. If you're going to do a horror movie that's remaking, make it your own as well, mm-hmm. as far as the message goes. And with this, there's a vapidness about beauty and fashion and one's looks. And that's something that I think is underlaid within Cronenberg's. And
yeah.
is it delivered very heavy-handedly? And the Saskas certainly picked up on it and decided to roll with it as part of the narrative, as her life.
But there's also another bit that I caught about the whole thing where it is like fashion and modeling. And the whole point of Rose is to feed, but the whole point of modeling is to never eat. Mm-hmm. So
there's an irony there for sure, yeah.
Exactly. Like there's this thing in her that she needs to feed. And so she continually does it. But like there's so many people around her who probably aren't eating at all.
And they actually talk about that at the beginning of the movie when they're talking about her being a vegetarian and her friend whose name
Chelsea.
Yeah. But yeah, she's talking about how she doesn't understand how she does it. She doesn't how she won't eat meat, but at the same time, she's also commenting on how she's always hungry. And I was going to say something about Saska sisters, and that seems to be one of their underlying themes is the nature of beauty, because American Mary is very clearly another commentary on that,
mm-hmm.
right? So that's a theme that they brought into this, and I knew it was coming. Just by, mm-hmm. by knowing from having watched their other movies that this is something that they kind of like to experiment with. Mm-hmm. Is
yeah, the pressures of society mm-hmm. on beauty, the self-esteem that comes with it. That's all in this movie for sure.
Oh, and the privilege that can yeah. happen with it.
Exactly, because poor Rose, I mean, they managed to make her a little more dowdy. I guess she was in a previous car wreck and she had facial scars yeah. and stuff. Nothing intense, but she was treated quite differently in society by her coworkers and just in public in general when mm-hmm. she's going to the club and they let the beautiful people in, but they got to check the guest list if you're not up yeah. to snuff.
Oh. Yeah. And it also affected her personality.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Her self-esteem yeah. and confidence. Yeah, yeah. absolutely. And yeah. after the surgery that reconstructs her face, she's healthier and more perfect than she ever was.
Mm-hmm.
Feels stronger, and her confidence comes with that as well.
Well, and not too, and it's sort of funny, she notices the change too when her and Chelsea go out to that nightclub, and mm-hmm. the guy's just like, oh, go on in. Mm-hmm. And she's like, what, you don't want to see my dear check? And he's like, no, because like, it's sort of like all of a sudden she gets this access that she never had before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a whole thing about beauty, and it's also the consumption of it. Like, it sort of devours itself all the time. These women are, like, striving to be beautiful and beautiful, and then once that goes away, like, it's just sucked them dry.
Mm-hmm.
Their lives, like, what do you have at the end of that? Because it's not going to last. It never does.
All right. Well, I think that's a great place to run the first trailer for David Cronenberg's 1977 version of Rabbit.
All around her, people are dying, and only Rose knows why.
You gotta come quick. You gotta come quick and get me.
It's Rose. It's gotta be. Something's happened to Rose.
Health officials have said they consider the outbreak of the new strain of rabies as being potentially the worst of this century.
Don't scream. Don't panic. He's dead, and the dead can't hurt the living. Rabbit.
The Prime Minister was reluctant to officially declare a state of emergency. But as any citizen in the streets can tell you, martial law has come to Montreal.
Shooting down the victims is as good a way of handling them as we have got.
Can't trust your mother, your best friend, the neighbor next door. One minute, they're perfectly normal. The next, rabid. Pray it doesn't happen to you. Rabbit.
Pray it doesn't happen to you either. Mm-hmm. Very 70s.
Very 70s.
That's the one thing I gotta say about both movies. Both trailers are really cheesy. I gotta say, the Saskas. I tried to pick the a little bit later trailer, but there was an earlier one for the Saskas version, and it comes off terrible. Like it,
oh, really?
It makes it look really low budget and badly acted.
Oh no!
So it was just badly put together. So I found a little bit better one. So because it's not as bad as the trailer makes it look.
No, it's not a bad movie at all.
No, not at all. Actually, I think I like it better than the Cronenberg movie. It's not a perfect movie.
No, and they rarely are, especially remakes. But I think the pacing in the remake is much better.
Oh, yeah, and it's a longer movie.
Biggest issue with Cronenberg is he hadn't figured out pacing yet. It's so long at the beginning. Mm-hmm. So long.
For being a shorter film, yeah. All right, Rabbit 1977 is written, directed, of course, by David Cronenberg, starring Marilyn Chambers, most famous for, well, things you probably shouldn't be watching.
And Downy commercials.
Yes.
Oh, the Downy commercials. That's where I know her from.
Which she was removed of when they found about her porn career. She is most famous before Behind the Green Doors, which was probably one of the first porn movies I ever saw as well.
That's your first one?
Well, you know, you're sneaking your dad's collection, right?
So. Okay.
So most of the early porn movies I was exposed to were the things I nabbed from my dad. His hidden drawer.
Yeah, because nice. All dads have one.
Yeah, all dads have one. So I was watching porn that was almost as old as I was.
Nice.
So it was very interesting that she was cast in this movie to begin with. David Cronenberg, who's friends with Sissy Spacek, wanted her to star in this movie. And it was Ivan Reitman who said, hey, this porn actress who's, you know, well known through the world. I mean, that was a very famous porn movie.
It was reviewed by Siskel and Ebert.
So it was that one was a big deal. It was right up there with Deep Throat.
It was those art house wide release porn movies.
Yeah.
They were movies with a plot, which was something that you didn't see in porn back in the 70s. It was climb on, bang away, and then
so she
move
did
on.
Prove
it's spooky nights.
She'd already kind of been in some non-pornographic films and was starting to break out of those, and because of her recognizability, Ivan Reitman said, hey, there's sex appeal here, and at that point, at least a little star power, and you get her fairly cheap.
And Sissy Spacek already had a horror movie coming out that year, which actually which was Carrie, and there's a poster for Carrie outside one of the movie theaters she walks by later on in the movie.
Yeah, it was just a little nod to her and say, hey, in support of Sissy.
We know it didn't work out, but it's fine.
She made the right choice because I don't think she would have been a breakout star because of this movie. She certainly was with Carrie, though.
Yes.
So, right decision.
Yeah, because this is not a performance-driven film.
No, and Marilyn Chambers was back to doing porn right up until her passing at the age of 56. She was still active in that industry.
Wow.
Frank Moore was Hart Reed. I mean, this is a very Canadian cast, so we probably haven't talked about most of these people. Well, I know we haven't talked about any of these people, really. Mm-hmm. But Hart Reed is known here for a little nugget of a horror movie. It was also a woman in a horror movie, Blood and Donuts. It was this wonderful horror comedy.
That's where I know him from.
Yeah.
I love that movie.
Yeah,
okay,
it was great.
There we go.
I don't know. I think it was you and me, Sam. We went to a little premiere. The director was actually there.
Yes.
And that was pretty cool.
She's gone on to some big things in television, but she's been working steady ever since.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And Hart Reed is very active today. He's been in lots of TV shows, including The Killjoys. Joe Silver is an older actor, Marie Cipher, he played, and an investor in this plastic surgery place within the film. Yeah. And he was in another Cronenberg movie, Shivers, and Creepshow 2.
Yeah, and I was surprised we hadn't talked to him because I recognized him right away. I've seen him in tons of stuff. Like, he's really.
This was near the kind of the back end of his career.
Yeah, but he'd been in a lot of stuff, but most of it was clearly Canadian, which is why I recognized him, but we haven't talked about him so much.
Yeah, it's nice that through both of these films we get to talk about the Canadian contingent, us being Canadians as well. Howard Reisban was Dr. Dan Keloid, and he was in an older movie called Virus, not related to that later one on the boat.
Yep. Nope.
And most famous, actually, for animated voice work.
Oh.
Tons of voice work. Patricia Gage was Dr. Roseanne Keloid, Dan's wife. She was in a fairly prominent role in Highlander the Raven and American Psycho.
Nice.
Yeah. Susan Roman was Mindy Kent. She was in the RoboCop TV show.
Oh, yes.
And again, also lots of voice work for Canadian film and television. A couple of my favorites, Rock and Rule and Heavy Metal.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, also starring Roger Perriards, Lynn Darragon, Terry Schonblum, Victor Desay, who was also in a Cronenberg movie, Scanners, Juliana, and Gary McKeehan.
Well, there's one you missed, and he actually our only connection to a past episode. It's, Miguel Fernandez, the guy who was in the porn theater, who hit on in the porn theater.
Oh, okay. Mm.
We talked about him in episode 33, Ghost Story.
Oh, you dove deep. Yeah. Like I said, once I've filled up three lines of cast, you're obviously not important enough. No,
I go
but he does become a zombie, so.
Yeah, and I just go to the end of the sort of the feature listing, and that's where I stop. If it's I stop at where see entire cast or whatever, I stop before I go that far. But I will go to the bottom of that list.
He did look familiar, though.
What, if you're porn theater guy, if you don't actually have a name, I don't name you.
Yeah, no.
And it was just
miscellaneous extra number 5.
Yeah, it was just by odd luck that I'm like.
But that's kind of cool. I'll sometimes scan and see if I recognize somebody who was in a smaller part that maybe went on to something. I'll scan it and see if I recognize somebody. Obviously, I didn't know who that guy was, so.
And neither did I. Like I said, I was just following my routine of going to the bottom of of the featured cast. I'm not sure why he was, because this was fairly early for him as well, and he doesn't have a huge body of work. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm like, oh, look at that. Ghost Story. Is it the right one? Mm-hmm. It is.
In some cases, a lot of these people, this was their only role.
Yeah.
You
know, it was pretty clear when you're watching this movie that these were new actors or never acted before type people, because some of the acting in this movie is bad.
Yeah.
Yes, including Marilyn Chambers, I'm afraid to say.
I'm afraid. So there are some times where she shines, but other times it's like, okay, not so good. I can see why the movie itself is thin on dialogue in general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would be surprised if Cronenberg cut some out, going, oh, you know what? I don't think she can carry this, so he...
And he did praise her, because apparently Marilyn worked really hard on this movie.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
So he did praise the hard work she put into the film, and it is. She's trying to break away from a stigma.
But it's one of those weird things, too, where I felt she was most on fire in this movie is when she's sort of in seduction mode in all of those moments.
Well, she does know those.
Yeah, she does, but she's practiced that, right?
I do. She's practiced that, but I'm like, I was kind of disappointed that it was there. There were some moments, too, like with her best friend, I was like, okay, I get, there's something happening there.
Yeah, there are certain times where it's believable where she didn't want to feed on her best friend, and when she was feeding, because what she needs to feed if is this weird tentacle phallic thing that sticks out from under her armpit. So she kind of goes in for this hug, and she manages to make something as innocent as a hug feel menacing and sexual at the same time.
Yes.
And that's unique. And I can't say it's quite the same in the Saskia's remake.
Well, I don't think she... Well, in the Saskia's remake, she keeps getting told these are hallucinations.
Yeah.
And she's sort of one of those people who's like, it's kind of happening, and she's sort of disassociated from it. Mm-hmm. And these things only really come out, it seems, when she's not really that conscious of it.
And the feeding mechanism came out of her mouth, so she would, they'd be kisses. I mean, even though we would later see protrusions coming out later, I wish we would have seen more development as we see these kind of weird sphincters forming on her body where these tentacles would come out of.
Shaving your armpit would be really weird.
Very, very odd. Yeah, but yeah, even in the original, she blacked out during these moments. She didn't remember them, but she just didn't remember them at all.
Yeah, no, there was this uncontrollable need to feed, and it would take over.
Whereas in the remake, and I like the fact that they did this, is where she has these troubling experiences, and she's questioning her own sanity, not realizing that she is actually doing them until it's way late in the game.
I mean, but she's getting lied to by the one person she's supposed to trust, which is this doctor, mm-hmm. who's like, oh no, this is fine. What I never really got about it too is where he could have gotten a very easy out with a lot of these quote unquote dreams, which would have been just to tell her, like, look, you've experienced a huge trauma, and sometimes your dream life is trying to make sense of it. It would have really sent her away for a little while longer. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's not good at
Though. He did say that to her.
No, he didn't really get there. He was just like, no, it's just hallucination. He's like, oh no, blood is because you just have yearnings and you feel guilty, and water is you're looking for emotions. Like, he used just like those dream journal things.
Yeah, I actually wrote down, are you a doctor or a psychologist?
Right.
Like, how many degrees or half degrees do you have on your wall?
Well, no, but what he's doing is like the whole... He's gaslighting her. Yeah, but I mean, you can pick these up at like the new age section of any bookstore.
You can
what
look it up on the internet.
Yeah, but I mean, that's all he's doing.
Yeah, no, they did feel like crackerjack wisdom.
Mm-hmm. And they were.
And I think it was supposed to. I think he was supposed to.
Oh, for sure. There was an instant distrust in this guy.
Yeah. From the get-go, from the moment you meet him, really.
Yeah. Like,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Whereas with Dr. Keloid in the original movie, you felt that his intent was benign. He was actually trying to help make people better.
Yeah, he had this experimental way of doing skin grafts, taking it from her leg and then using it other parts of her body. Now, with Marilyn Chambers' character in the original film, there was a motorcycle accident and she's trapped in the motorcycle when it explodes.
Yeah. So she's like burns all over her body.
Yeah, so it's bad. It is very, very bad. And it happens right near this plastic surgery clinic. And
Conveniently.
Mm-hmm. So she isn't going to survive. The driver has wounds, but nothing is severe. He could have easily made the 3-hour drive to a proper hospital, but they needed to get her taken care of right away, and this was the moral thing for him to do.
Yeah, but, and he also doesn't want to profit, like they're trying to do, make a deal, like with this for-profit KFC. They say it's like a KFC brand hospital, and he doesn't want to do it because he feels it's morally wrong to do that.
Yeah, but at the same time, he's catering to the rich and people who need to, I don't need plastic surgery.
And I love that in the original movie. I really enjoyed that. This is like a plastic surgery farm where people come and there's one guy's a regular.
Yes.
So in a way, he kind of is like, hey, I'm happy to work on somebody who actually needs it.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm trying to remember what the thing was, the pseudoscience on this one, because
it was stem cell.
Yeah.
In the original,
he's like, no, what you're going to do is this skin will use the cells and it'll grow like any other cell, how it should normally grow where it is.
But it was a
It is what stem cells are supposed to do. Yeah. Is they're supposed to change to grow as per where they are.
Never referred to as that, and that's because he called it the bath.
He called it something else, but that's what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the end, and I think that's why the Sauce Decision sort of went with that. And
absolutely. Just
went, well, it is it's stem cell.
Yeah, because now we have further developed technology that can explain that, at least.
But it is interesting that Cronenberg kind of touched on stem cell research before it became into the public consciousness.
Yeah, it was funny, before we even watched this movie, we had planned to do this movie, and Sam sends me an email, just turned up on his timeline on Twitter or somewhere, or Facebook, about 3D printing skin grafts.
Yes.
It's like, oh, especially after you watch this movie, I'm like, maybe not.
Although, with the printing of your skin grafts, I think the point of it is to use your own cells to use it to make the stuff to make, so it's like it's yours and your body shouldn't reject it. And I think they're using other stuff, but I don't know, it's very weird. If you print it and you make a change to the DNA structure, you could really fuck some shit up.
Yeah, whereas like in the original film, again, I didn't understand why she mutated in general. I guess it would have been whatever they did to the skin graft that they took off her thigh and then mutated it so it could replace all the skin on her body.
And it was the bath that they put the skin in to because the whole idea that behind the bath was that it would allow the cells to regenerate faster without scarring.
Yeah, in the remake, they were putting on this kind of translucent gel that was cut in the shape of the wounds to regrow. And I mean, it's not just regrowing skin, it's regrowing muscle tissue as well.
And correcting her vision. She doesn't need glasses anymore.
Yeah.
Like, it heals everything. Like, every defect that she ever had. Not being able to see the defect, but any issue that she had that was corrected.
Yeah, exactly. Like eyesight, I mean, that sort of deteriorates. So it will sort of put her cells backwards to where they were healthier.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it repairs everything.
Which is crazy.
And I think it would have been a little more fun to, a little bit of fun to experiment with that a little bit more, but at an hour and 47 minute runtime, I think
it was already a fairly lengthy time. Yeah. There were things I was always kind of hoping to see when her friend Chelsea is bitten in town. We never get to see the attack or anything.
Yeah,
we just hear about it. And I'm like, well, whoa. Where? I felt like a little ripped off on that one.
Right.
And I disagree on that. I think it was, because you kind of anticipate that it was happening because you can't get a hold of her, right? So, and I actually didn't expect her to show up at all.
I mean, they handled it well because we knew what happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I did. I felt like we see other people get attacked and that we don't have an emotional connection to, but we do to this character. I thought it would have been more impactful to see it. And it would have affected us more.
And see, I kind of anticipated it because she was trying to get a hold of her. But I liked the way that they handled it just because it sets up the rest of the movie so nicely, but I don't think we needed to see it. I think they made the right call on that. But
well, I mean, would I have rather seen CM Punk or Chelsea? I think I would have rather seen Chelsea. Oh, the CM Punk scene's great, but I would have cut that one in favor of the Chelsea scene.
I can agree with you on that, right? Or shortened up the CM Punk scene so that you could fit in the Chelsea scene for sure, right? Especially the scene where he comes back and attacks her in the restaurant.
Yeah.
That was way longer than it needed to be.
Yes.
Yeah. So we've already seen a few attacks and stuff, so like I don't know, we could have shortened that up or just done away with it entirely. I think it's a case of sometimes you're like, oh, we got CM Punk, we got to do something with that.
Yeah.
Well, the restaurant bit, I thought it was interesting. I thought they were going somewhere with the guy character because at this point he's trying to get this guy down, but then he takes like a fire extinguisher and just like plummels his head in, like he kills someone.
He literally beats him to death with a fire extinguisher.
He beats him to death, and I'm like going, okay, I thought there was something.
With no consequence.
Yes, and I thought there was something else that was going to happen there, like maybe because he had in like his tendencies of violent behavior that he was able to control, he was slightly.
Yeah, I don't know. The Brad Hart character in that film never quite lands for me either. He's set up with Rose by her friend Chelsea, and Rose is a little put off by it, that this wasn't a natural pickup. This was a setup. And
it was a pity date.
Yeah.
You're going to feel ashamed.
Yeah.
For that,
so she feels pretty awful about it. And then later on, it kind of happens again where the doctor's like, oh, are you the boyfriend? No. And kind of hires him to keep an eye on her and protect her, which is that. But how much is he getting paid? And he is genuinely attracted to her, but it's the plot consistently undermines that.
Yes.
And you never feel like it's genuine. You're not supposed to.
And there's a journalistic part of it, too, where, I mean, they undermine the whole point where it's like, even if he does care for her and is pursuing this story, particularly on her behalf, I never got that. Like, it didn't feel like they should have maybe had done something with that, where he's like, if I can figure this out, maybe I can save her. I don't know.
It was weird because I didn't actually know he was a journalist until they said it. I just thought he was a fashion photographer.
Oh, no. Well, they mention it at the party. He
clearly didn't pick up on it.
Oh, at the party, they're having the conversation. He says, this just pays the bills until I can become a photojournalist.
Yeah, that's right. I do remember that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So he wasn't, technically. No. He was still...
He was aspiring.
He was aspiring. Mm. So this would have been a good story for him.
Yes. Right?
Like, Burroughs would have let that out anyway.
I know.
Yeah. Because Burroughs, he has his own motivations.
Yeah.
See, I would have thought, there would have been a whole other bit where Burroughs was experimenting on him, too. Like, I would have done something different with his character, I feel.
It's weird. Even his internet ad feels dodgy. It's like, yes, they don't want you to have the truth, and they don't want you to have...
Oh, absolutely.
I'll run that whole, like, fake ad for this clinic, transhumanism.
Transhumanism, which is just a fancy word for eugenics, if we're thinking about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, the wealthy are going to get all the best care and become superior to other humans. Like, there's a bit of a Nazi shit going on in there.
This is the precursor to Khan!
Yeah, exactly, Khan! Okay, so this guy made Khan. Okay, got it.
Yeah.
And there we go, tying stuff together again.
I thought there was going to be stuff coming out of the dogs at the end as well, but I never got that.
No.
Remember when he's got all those dogs, and I'm like, I thought there would be some sort of weird creeps coming out of the dogs.
Mm-hmm.
He's the type of dude who would do it.
Very Cronenberg-esque.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, I think it was just a bit of a fake out, too.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I would have liked that better, honestly. You know, we see Rose commit suicide at the end, but she's got immortal skin grafts.
Oh, that was just resurrected so disheartening. Her,
and she's, like, stuck in a cage for the rest of her life. I do like the downer endings on both, really.
Yes.
You know, like, Rose in the original film doesn't believe she is the carrier for this disease that she's spreading. So every time she feeds, it incubates in the victim when they recover, and they eventually get this rabies-like infection. But they can be taken down. They still have the human organs and whatnot. In the Saskas, it's a little tougher to take them down.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it mutates throughout the movie.
Right? It does. It gets worse and worse.
It gets worse and worse and faster and faster, mm-hmm. right? Because first it was 24 to 48 hours, and then it was like...
Within eight hours,
and then like an hour for Chelsea, and the guy from the alley who shows up as like a huge mutant monster,
almost immediate for him. FYI, the getting off the ground of that guy in the alley, how epic was that?
That was pretty epic.
That was pretty cool.
I was watching it going like, ooh.
That must have been some kick-ass contortionist who did that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I'll admit that whole scene was actually a bit of a shocker for me. And I mean, I'll admit horror movies don't really shock me very often, but I wasn't expecting what happened there. Mm-hmm. Surprisingly enough, I wasn't expecting the moment where the first time we see one of her tentacles comes out, and it's just all of a sudden, boom, there it is. And I was like, wow, whoa, wait a minute. What just happened?
It was a fast one.
When did we get Cthulhu-esque with this? Yeah.
Exactly. Well, the guy keeps filming. I think it's so fast, even he doesn't notice it.
Yeah, he doesn't even realize what happened. Yeah.
Yeah.
His buddy's dead.
Yeah. And that's what I liked about it. It was the genius of it because it was so quick and you knew what happened, but it just like takes that second to register. It's like, holy shit, what just happened?
Absolutely.
And so you're in the guy filming's position. It's like, you don't even realize that something has happened yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, I like how they handled it where you're seeing it in shadow and whatnot. Yeah. It's far more severe than we ever actually see on full. Again, I think they were constrained by budget.
Mm-hmm. But they made good use of it.
They did make good use of it. I mean, it was only $500,000 for the original. It was $5 million for the remake. Yeah.
Well, I mean, then that end scene, that would take a lot of stuff to do. Like the one, like the ex-wife on the wall.
Yeah. Yeah. But,
oh, and that moment, finally I have a character who did something like I would do in the movie. She's like, oh, this is my wife, blah, blah, blah. He locks her in a room with his wife, and he's holding her prisoner, and he's pulling shit on her, and he doesn't think she's gonna kill his wife.
Yeah, he was save her from cancer. Basically, he made an immortal cancer, and she's like growing she's and writhing tumor. On the wall. This big tumor on a wall.
Yeah, that wasn't his wife, but yeah, like if you're gonna put me in a thing with your ex-wife and be like, oh yeah, isn't this great? I'm gonna kill her because you've just fucked up a lot of shit for me.
Yeah,
I'm pretty pissed off.
Yeah, you've turned me into one of the worst things possible for humanity.
Yeah, made me a carrier and spread this disease,
and give me a hunger I can't control.
Yeah,
on top of it all.
And see, that was the other bit about it too, like a hunger you can't control. Like I always imagined too, because she was in fashion. If it was somebody like if they do a sequel, it would be like somebody who's so used to starving herself, they will try and starve out the creature.
Yeah. I didn't feel like the focus is as much in the remake on how quickly the infection was spreading. I mean, they certainly covered it in the TV show and in the newscasts and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But it didn't feel as dire as it did in the Cronenberg, where it became like the city on martial law. There was CDC.
Yeah, it's CDC in the U.S. It was the Provincial Disease Bureau or something like that.
Yeah, World Health Organization, I think, was in there as well. Yeah. So there was like a health warning, a disease warning within the Saska film as well. But it doesn't quite feel as dire, and the natives aren't as fearful of it as they should be, where it seems to come up a lot in the Cronenberg one, just in the citizens in general. And it becomes very chaotic. The Cronenberg feels like this is his version of Night of the Living Dead.
Mm.
Yeah, and because you see a lot more of these zombies. They look more zombie-like and consistently. They have a very consistent look throughout the Cronenberg's version.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the Saska Sisters, you have basically two victims that you see, and then all of a sudden it's an epidemic. So, and it didn't feel as organic as it did in Cronenberg's.
Yeah, I think because we see like the victims in Cronenberg's attacking other people and those people also turning.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't get as much of that in the Saskia's version.
Just in the hospital. Yeah. It's the only time you really see that.
Yeah, with that soap star.
On set when he attacks the other actor.
We do see what happens to her as well.
Yeah.
But they're focusing more on the drama with Rose, I think, and justifiably so. Like, this was, I think, the best I've seen Laura Vandervoort ever in a film.
Yeah,
she was really good at it. She played basically three roles really well, right? Because you had the meek Rose from the beginning of the film. Then you have the conflicted Rose from the hallucinations, and actually there's four, really. Then there's the uber-confident Rose that comes with being beautiful all of a sudden, plus there's the mad Rose who feeds on everything. So there's like a lot of dynamics there, and she does all of it really well.
Yeah, I think so, too. And I think maybe that's a great time to run the trailer for the 2019 Rabbit.
You've just had reconstructive surgery. You can't take your bandages off just yet.
Rose Miller! I want you into work on time.
I just don't get Rose. She's so weird and sad. Did you ask Brad to bring me here?
Can I get you a drink?
Oh, who told you? I'm so humiliated. Why would you do this to me?
Schadenfreude. The pleasure derived from someone else's misfortune.
I want you to keep in mind this is going to be a process.
Give her the mirror.
Mr. the proper diet, you'll be able to live a perfectly normal life.
Stem cell manipulation is the key to life. They are already being sold to the most wealthy. It's incredible. It's like the accident never even happened.
No, it's not like it never happened. I've been having vivid nightmares. Why am I dreaming about drinking blood?
Some people who dream about drinking blood often have unfulfilled yearnings. It's tied to the guilt of desire.
Where can I take you, Rose?
Nowhere.
Ow!
Too rough for you? She went insane and bit me.
An outbreak of rabies. Avoid all animals or humans exhibiting violent or erratic behavior.
It spreads like an STD. If you do not stop it, it could affect all of mankind.
How's your appetite?
Okay, that was 2019, Rabid, written and directed by Jen and Sylvia Saska, with the story by John Surge. The Saskas have directed quite a few things in the past, the stellar American Mary, the See No Evil 2. I still like the franchise, though. Don't get me wrong.
Well, guilty they got pleasure. Stuck with the two.
I have not seen Dead Hooker in a Trunk, but it's one of their earliest, and it's a tough movie to get your hands on. So
it is crazy fun. You can tell it's a self-funded first movie, but it is crazy fun.
Yeah, and I was quite a fan of their weird little horror game show called Hellevator.
Oh, I loved Hellevator. Bring it back, please. It was so much fun.
Yeah, me and a friend who really are into horror stuff, we were both said, yeah, we'd never get picked for Hellevator because we wouldn't get scared. They'd hate us.
True.
They'd try harder.
They'd try harder, yeah. And I'd be like, oh, you think that's good? I'm coming for you, Saskas.
Well, it's the same thing with Price is Right. If you aren't excited enough, they aren't going to pick you.
No, exactly. If you're nervous, they'll go, I want that person. Yeah,
absolutely.
Of course they want you. They want you to be scared. And they pulled some shit on that show where, like, yeah, I don't know how I would have fared on that either.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they really love getting the overconfident people, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh. Well, hear that, Saska sisters? Challenge issued. Bring Jay on your show. Let's see how this goes.
It's nobody issued a challenge.
I did. I'm making it happen now.
Starring Laura Vandervoort, who, of course, was Rose. She was in Jigsaw, currently seen on V-Wars on Netflix. And what's Supergirl, for Christ's sake, on Smallville?
Mm-hmm.
Supergirl. The hottest Supergirl ever. I think I was tapping out shortly after Supergirl showed up, but I was like, holy Jesus. When she showed up, I'm like, maybe went a little touch overboard on that one. Everybody's going to be looking up Supergirl skirt. But, you know, that's probably why they put her in this movie. I was actually surprised they didn't go with another porn star, to be honest, because Saskas are very free with what they like. They have gone to the AVNs. They've posted pictures of them at the AVNs, and they secretly wrote some stuff for the Deadpool XXX movie.
Ooh.
Oh, did they?
The porn parody. Yeah, it comes up as a uncredited writing thing. Well, why not? They've written comics before. They wrote the Black Widow comic book series recently. So
yes, cool. And I actually even need to check that out because it sounds like a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
See, now I'm thinking about the Deadpool porn parody. That's where I go with, like, I kind of want to see this now.
Yeah, so they get their fingers in a lot of pies as far as, you know.
Pun intended.
Pun intended in any way, shape, or form you want to. Figured out comics and film and short films, and
they're the Kevin Smiths of horror.
Yeah,
nice.
So, you know, when you look at the resume, and it might not seem that long as far as movies, but
other
they're
stuff.
Very active in all sorts of things. So,
and talented, don't
yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I like they are very talented, and I highly respect them, but. I don't like all their movies, but I don't have to. It's a personal opinion. But this is, I think, one of their better ones, for sure.
There's people and directors I like that have given me shit, but I still love them. So you have to... Everybody has good days. Everybody has bad days.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is.
Yeah. I don't find everything consistent in this movie, but I certainly like what they tried and like that they made something that honored the original and still felt fresh.
Yes.
Theirs. And Cronenberg gave a lot of room for that. I don't know how he feels about it. I mean, publicly, he's stated he doesn't really want people to remake his material.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think he owned Rabbit. I think that was probably Telefilm.
Yeah. Most likely. And I may be wrong, but I seem to remember reading something that the Saska sisters were actually invited to do this remake.
Yeah. Well, I mean, other filmmakers have been approached to remake Cronenberg things, and many of them have turned it down because they'll approach Cronenberg to get blessings. So I don't know if they went and got Cronenberg's blessings or just were super excited to do it.
You know,
that's a tough line too. It's like, well, would you walk away from a project just because the director's not behind it? The previous director's not behind it? It's not like Cronenberg didn't remake somebody else's material either.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But so it seems a little hypocritical to not let somebody else do a different interpretation of his material either. And I mean, really, Rabbit was, as far as I'm concerned, was his version of Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah, but when I think of how they approach things and how he approached things, I could see why he would go with this, because it seems like they're on the same page with, like, body horror type of stuff.
Yeah, I think they were obviously approached it with reverence to the material. And just Cronenberg in general. You can see that they're fans. They certainly have their fangirl moments throughout the movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's the shivers moment, which is when Rose descends into the pool to feed on this guy at the clinic. And it totally reminded me of Shivers near that end scene. In the end scene where she goes in for that kiss, she's wearing the dress. It totally reminded me of that scene. I should probably get on with the rest of this cast, and then we'll talk about some more of the fangirl moments.
Yes.
Benjamin Hollingsworth was Brad Hart. He was in Code Black and Virgin River, lots of TV stuff. Ted Atherton was Dr. William Burroughs, the villain of this film. He's most recently in The Expanse, also in The Killjoys, and Hollywoodland. I highly recommend Hollywoodland.
Nice.
Such a great movie. Haneke Talbot was Chelsea. She was in Ready or Not.
Nice.
And Titans, the TV series. So she's getting around as well. Stephen Hazar was Dominic. And he was, that was the soap star.
Oh, okay.
And he was in 30 Days of Night, Dark Days.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he was the worst performance in the movie for me. I found him really, really awkward.
Yeah, I thought so too, to be honest. I guess I shouldn't be surprised when the biggest, most recognizable thing was 30 Days of Night, Dark Days, which was direct-to-video release. Yeah. Mackenzie Gray, on the other hand, he was Gunter. He was the fashion designer.
He was so much fun.
He's been around for a while. He was Jaxor in the Man of Steel movie. Say what you want about that movie, like it or hate it, but he was pretty good as Jaxor. And he was most recently on Legion, the TV series, as The Eye. One of my favorite actors, he only had a small part, and I was very upset that it was just a small part, but it was also the Dr. Kelloid character. In this one, he's just a proper hospital doctor and dealing with the accident that Rose was... She basically was running from the club and got plowed by a vehicle.
To be fair,
so he did all the reconstruction on her.
He did the reconstruction, but the whole bit they show at the beginning, she almost gets into an accident. Well, and then again, I'm like going, "It is." And see, I sort of is
or
foreshadowing.
She's clumsy.
She's a bad driver. Yeah. That's what I was getting about this whole thing. Is like going, she's just bad at driving.
Just a commentary on how dangerous scooters really are.
We'd already heard this Oscars talk about a previous accident she was in,
right?
So. Well, by the way, they showed up in their trailer fairly prominently for such a short scene. But I do like the scene because they're commenting on the character, they're giving information on the character and her past. And this is something when I went through film school that I always loved when filmmakers and directors show up and they actually deliver dialogue that feels like privileged information, which it is. And oftentimes when a director shows up, they're giving information that they otherwise probably their character shouldn't have. And I thought that was pretty cool. So, but yeah, they turned up in their own trailer fairly prominently. I'm like, you're not in this very much, but that trailer sure makes it look like you are.
Well, why not? Hey, it's your movie.
It is your movie. Do whatever the hell you want. Anyway, I was about to mention Canadian Treasure Stephen McHattie. I can't get enough of him when I see him in anything.
I saw him there. I'm like, oh, I feel safe now.
Yeah. You can currently see him on October Faction on Netflix. He was fairly prominent in the Watchmen film. Probably one of the most underrated Canadian horror movies. Maybe not, because it's starting to go forth and become a cult film, and it's called Pontypool.
Yes.
Highly recommend it. It's a really unique take on the zombie genre via sound, so please check it out. It's so good. Kevin Hanchard was Dr. Riley from Orphan Black. Heidi Von Pulaski was Dr. Elliot, who was actually in another Cronenberg movie, Dead Ringers.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, it was very cool. Joel LaBelle was Trent Taylor from Shadowhunters, the Mortal Instruments TV series.
Okay, there we go.
Of course, CM Punk. I think this was actually his first acting role, but Girl on the Third Floor was a starring role and was released prior to this release.
Yeah, this one took a long time from filming to release for some reason.
Yeah, I'm not sure why that was, but Girl on the Third Floor got released later. But this, I think, was his first acting role. And he was decent for what it was, despite me wanting to see that cut down for other narrative purposes. But I liked the part.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he played a dick, and you were happy to see when bad shit happens to him.
Yes. And this is, again, he was the point where I'm like, finish your food.
Yeah.
Because then this wouldn't have happened. I don't want him to live. Finish your food.
And I like that he comes back to like attack her again.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like this sexual predator just becomes a predator.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to get into that because that could have taken the film in some really interesting direction if they'd have sort of followed that theme of them trying to find her.
Yeah.
Because she's the apex. She's like the point of it. Like it's sort of... It's weird they can kind of smell that she's
I think
the
that
mother.
Would have been a really interesting direction. Before we go too far, you talked about Stephen McHattie a whole bunch. Forgot to mention we've talked about him before.
We have several times. I didn't actually catch what we've covered, but I know we've talked about him in 31 Days of Horror episodes.
But the only episode that wasn't 31 Days of Horror was Death Wish.
Oh.
He was in the remake.
Yeah, I didn't catch that. I just don't remember stuff.
Yeah. I just keep thinking, like, I got to rewatch Pontypool again.
Yeah, well, and I've not seen it. I keep meaning to, and I haven't.
So good.
I've watched that so many times.
Well, it's because you guys have talked about it so much, and it's been talked about on our 31 Days of Horror a few times. I'm like, I want to watch it, but we've already talked about it on 31 Days of Horror, so I keep postponing it.
Watch it.
Yeah.
Just watch it. You don't have to cover it.
Exactly. So
you're free.
So, yeah.
I can watch
it
whenever I want. Yeah, I know
exactly.
But yeah, I wanted to just go back to CM Punk real quick because having watched Girl on the Third Floor and this, I don't think he's a good actor, but man, he's got watchable charisma.
I think, like, I've seen the trailer for Girl on the Third Floor. I would say if I'd seen this and between that and the trailer, I wouldn't have known it was the same person. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe this one was probably the first one he did, but he did some work in between this and Girl on the Third Floor mm-hmm. where there's more going on.
I do look forward to seeing him grow as an actor. I think maybe we'll see where that goes, because, like, I still find the deliveries are a little awkward, but
this is a little over the top for me.
So. Yeah, I thought so too, but I still enjoy watching him. There's something because mm-hmm. he has that intensity that came with being a WWE wrestler. So mm-hmm. yeah. that translates well to film with those anger roles.
Yeah. And I think that's why you found it so over the top, is because that's what you do on WWE.
You're cutting a promo.
And he's now now he has to sort of tone it back, and that's going to take some time for him to sort of find that balance.
Yeah. Well, when we did, what was it, Standing Tall with The Rock, we're like going, mm-hmm. no, there is a charisma there, but there's got to be more work in, like, the craft yet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we find that with everybody we've really talked about. Yeah, gone from West.
I look forward to seeing him do more roles and seeing his evolution as an actor. Mm-hmm. AJ Mendez, who's also AJ Lee at WWE, was also in here briefly as Kira. Eddie Inksetter was Dr. Beverly, who was in A Handmaid's Tale over on Hulu. And Tristan Risk was Nurse Dana, who was in The Editor and American Mary.
Ooh, cool. So yeah, they're like, they brought her in.
yeah. So they got some people that they like to work with as well, but that's what most directors will try to cast their friends and, or at least people they've worked with in the past and have done right by them.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, I mean, honestly, if you're thinking about this, you're like, if I bring in somebody that I know what they can do and do that, I don't have to worry about that thing. That's one less thing I have to worry about.
Yeah. You know, and most directors will develop kind of this unofficial troupe of actors. Yeah.
And they tend to be supporting actors mostly. But
yeah. And Sasuke's no different. We'll see that grow as time moves mm-hmm. on. So
as they get more movies under their belt and make more movies. And please do.
Yeah, yes. Absolutely. I want to go back to the fangirl moments that they had, because we did mention the Shivers moments. Did you spot the Dagger Ringers moment?
How do you miss that one? There is no missing it.
That is by far the most blatant one.
Yeah, the red operating robes that look very...
Like the cape.
Identical. Yeah, look identical to the ones in Red Dingers.
Yeah. Red Dingers?
Yeah. Red Dingers.
Red Dingers.
The porn parody.
Yes. Speaking of.
Like just like these silk red operating robes, which are not like the color is the only practical thing about them.
Yes. Mm-hmm. There's one that I almost missed is the doctor's name is William Burroughs. Mm-hmm. That's a nod to Naked Lunch.
Yes.
Oh, that one I didn't catch. Yes. I didn't know the reference, but I haven't seen Naked Lunch either. So
yeah, and which is based on the book written by William S. Burroughs.
Another gooey film.
Yes.
Yeah. That makes sense. This one tries to throw some weird shit at you while still being cohesive. There's this weird, what I call the Silent Hill dream sequence. I'll be honest, I didn't like that very much.
I thought it was visually really fun. Mm-hmm. Did it fit in the movie? Not particularly well.
Yeah, I felt like it was just kind of dropped in there for cool factor.
I feel like other films have done it better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I get it. You know, if she's thinking she's in a dreamlike state through these feedings, maybe we should see something from her perspective. But I don't know. I felt like if you're going to do this, do more of it or just don't do it.
Or have all of the dream sequences similar to that. Like when she goes to feed, it is that same style. But see, I would have liked it more had it gone.
Have the audience feel like it's dream and reality at the same time.
But also confused feel like she's somewhat not unconscious when they're doing the work on her. Mm-hmm. So that it feels like she's experiencing it again and it is suspicious. And it doesn't feel right. And she's like, no, I'm not having a dream. I'm just reliving what happened to me, which would have been more interesting, I feel. But
the intent obviously was to sort of show her perspective and sort of show what it's like. But you're right. It either needs to be more or less or not at all.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right. You need to see that progress, perhaps, like just moments of it.
Yeah, I felt it just didn't fit.
Yeah, and again, that might have been a timing thing again because about hour 47. That's long for a horror film, and it doesn't feel it. I have to say, it does not feel longer than the original.
No. It's like I said, it's a very watchable film. I kind of like how they did certain things. There's small touches where they do say this is a mutated version of rabies, and we do see some of the victims actually foaming from the mouth, and it looks really cool.
It does look really cool. And I think that that's what gave them some leeway. And they say it in Cronenberg's film as well, but I think that's where they took some leeway, is that it's mutating as well, which is why we see the progression of the zombies getting more and more monstrous.
Mm-hmm. And what the CDC guy was saying is like going, the first one had taken this long, and the next one this long is like, and this one happened like just hours ago. He's like, this is really ramping up. This whole thing is changing.
No, I like how they made it their own. There's some other small touches that they did in this film that pay homage to the original film, like the fur coat she's wearing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We actually see Marilyn Chambers right at the beginning in that big billboard. So you can't miss it.
Yeah.
But then she's wearing a very similar fur coat, which also goes back to the vegetarianism, not wanting to hurt animals, and now she's wearing them later.
Yeah.
So that speaks to the character's change as well, which I quite enjoyed. There was also the Cronenberg where one of the cops going to shoot one of these rabid zombies shoots a zombie and accidentally shoots a mall Santa.
Oh, yeah.
And then we later see an infected Santa at the hospital in the Saskas version.
Yes.
So, again, I like how they play homage to the original film and have these little bits.
Did I tell you the one thing, too, where it was like the Santa in the original film and like his little elf lady person? I'm like going, ooh, that skirt's too short. I don't want to see the elf's ass. Love Christmas. Don't eat elf ass.
I feel like we've had this conversation before.
We really have.
Elf ass and
elf ass.
Yeah, probably, yeah. Transfers, actually, probably.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's the North Pole. It's cold. Put her in pants.
They're there for the dads who are waiting with their kids.
Don't care. It's not Dad's Day. It's for the kids. If he can't deal with that, then he should fucking leave.
Okay. She's not about sexy elf ass.
Yeah. That poor Santa just gets caught in the crossfire.
Every time.
Yes.
Don't be a mall Santa. It's scary.
We're going to have to start keeping a board.
A rule of life discovered on a Vision remake. Don't be a mall Santa.
Yeah, especially in a horror movie.
It ends badly for you in every movie.
It's not going to go well.
Mm-hmm. Unless
it's Miracle on 34th Street, it's not going to go well.
Unless you're Billy Bob Thornton. Nothing. And even then, a bunch of stuff doesn't go his way.
A horror movie, you're dead. Comedies, you're probably going to live.
Yeah. And action movies, no. You are also dead.
Probably dead. Yeah.
Yeah. Or at the very least hospitalized. Things will not go your way.
Mm-hmm. Drama, you just get dragged to court.
I don't know what the message is there. It's just like, we fucking hate mall Santas? Is that what the...
Yeah, Hollywood is like going, don't trust these guys. I know what it is. It's a very capitalist statement by Hollywood that don't trust anybody who gives anything away for free because we own it. That's it.
Yeah.
Or alternatively, it's like, we know that fucking with Santa is going to fuck you up, so we're going to fuck with Santa.
True. I guess. I don't know. They did put him up against Martians. That was kind of interesting.
Yeah, but he won there.
He did.
Yeah.
You just make more Santas than that one. So it's not always bad. Mm-hmm. 50 sci-fi, you're doing okay, Santa. From there on in, you're fucked.
Well, let's get back to the rabbit here.
Sorry. We got it on a Santa tangent.
We did get on a Santa tangent.
But yeah, anyway. Okay, pass the Santa.
Well, your notes. You made a comment that Sam made a comment that it takes a long time to get going with the Cronenberg.
It does, yes.
But in a way, this one does too, because it's quite a far ways into the film before we get to and are even introduced to Dr. Burroughs and his clinic with the transhumanism and all that. So with the Cronenberg film, I feel like the transformation actually happens earlier than in the Saska movie because of how late it happens. But there's so much that happens to Rose in the Saska movie. You don't actually notice that we haven't got to the zombies yet.
Well, and I think, too, is it's focused on Rose, so you're traveling with this character almost entirely through the length of the movie, right? Whereas in Cronenberg's, it's back and forth between Murray and Hart are talking and Dr. Keloid and his wife are talking. And so it takes a long time to sort of get to Rose's story, right? I think that's what I meant more than anything else, is Rose's story takes a long time to actually develop. Mm-hmm. And she's really almost like a minor character, even though she's mm-hmm. the key figure.
Yeah, the Cronenberg movie, it's got a weird pacing to it because she's desperate to get back to Hart in Montreal, and then mm-hmm. Hart has gone to get her at the Keloid Institute, so they're missing each other, and so she's hitchhiking back and feeding on people along the way. Yeah. Before she gets back to Montreal, and then because she's murdered all these people at the Institute, Hart gets stuck there because of they want to make sure he's not infected as well.
Right, and that was and I know why Cronenberg did it the way he did. He wanted to show the spreading of the virus, and it works really well.
Yeah, he spends a lot of time showing the spreading of the virus.
Yeah, because I mean she's the carrier, so she's the virus is the central character in the film. To be honest,
yeah,
mm-hmm. right,
yeah,
and she's just the carrier. She's patient zero, as it were.
Yeah, we don't get
she's
a lot
the typhoid
of,
Mary.
Yeah, we don't get a lot of actual development with her. We do see a later conflict with internally mm-hmm. with her when she starts struggling with what's happening.
Yes.
And is being convinced, like, well, I'm not the one who's doing this. I'm not the carrier for this. When she actually is. And she doesn't believe right to the end.
No, until she essentially sacrifices herself. It's like, well, if I'm the carrier, then he won't attack me.
Yeah.
Right. And that's where I think the Saska sisters sort of went with that scene with CM Punk in the restaurant is that's kind of that parallel.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Is, yeah, he will.
If the zombie ate Rose at the end of the movie, then who tossed her body next to the trash?
I was wondering about that myself. Yeah, I don't know. Did he throw... Was the trash just at the bottom of his window and he just threw her out there?
I mean, it's a great visual when it does invoke Romero-esque imagery when they're tossing her body in the back of the garbage truck and then crushing it.
And the whole point of it, too, which I really loved, was... it was the idea they were trying to find the source of this virus, and it just silently, quietly...
Goes away.
Goes away, and they're not going to find it.
The rabid people can spread it amongst themselves, mm-hmm. so they don't really need her anymore to spread the disease.
No,
but like the patient zero that they were wondering about, it's just one of those things, like to solve the mystery, you just know it's never going to be solved now.
Yeah, but clearly she... doesn't turn into a zombie herself because mm-hmm. if she's the host, she's attacked and dies.
Yeah, because she
succumbs to the disease herself.
Well, I think she succumbs to the attack versus the disease because she is the disease.
Yeah.
Right? So she can't be infected by it and become a zombie.
Yep.
Whereas the Saska's ones, they're very much zombie-esque and a little more resilient, especially as they further go along. There's that big black one.
The
zombie.
Mutant one. He does not go down easy.
I'm like, what the fuck happened to you to look like that?
Well, don't forget that she punched her tentacle up through the bottom of his jaw. And, spoiler.
Oh, so maybe like it's that whole thing. Like it went up through his jaw, up through his head. And because this whole virus is about like fixing the body, it was like it fixed it just in a real messed up way.
Yeah, the virus is trying to
repair,
it's immortal, repair it in the way it thinks it should look. So this is the way we found it.
Yeah. Well, and this is the whole thing. When they talk about like the cells, you're trying to make them do the right thing. But if you get cells out of control doing the wrong thing, that's when shit goes real wrong.
I have to say that I actually enjoyed the Saska version more than the original.
Yeah. I think the message is here, beware of miracle science.
Yes, both of them. But yeah, I just like the way that the way they use the color and the way they took the original story.
Oh, the use of color is really good with the reds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially as we see it happen with Rose herself as she goes further and further.
Yeah, there's some very Giallo-esque moments in this movie. And without being like really blatant about it, like it was just enough there that you recognize it, but subtle enough that you're like, oh, look, Giallo. Right? It's just, it was nice.
Oh, yeah. You really pick up on the reds. It's in her wardrobe or the thing she's designing or the lighting.
Yeah.
Red keeps coming up over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Or just her lipstick. Like, there is one scene where I'm like, okay, yeah, that's the nod right there.
Yeah. So I love the fact that they clearly love the original, as you should. It's still a good movie. Don't get me wrong. It's just they took what was already good and made it modern and fixed some of the problems that the original story had. Mm-hmm. Not without creating a few of their own, mind you, but...
Yeah, it's certainly they do have a few of their own in this one, but overall I think it's a very solid remake. It's the things we generally ask of a filmmaker to do when they tackle a remake is make it your own, do something different with it. And I think they do succeed in that. I want to look at the critic scores here for IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes, because it's kind of interesting, because I don't think the Cronenberg one is a particularly well-made movie. Mm. It sits at 6.3 out of 10 on IMDb.
One of his highest ratings.
Yeah. Mm. It was very interesting, and Rotten Tomatoes has it at a critic score of 73%, which is really high, and then a more realistic audience score of about 45%. So
yeah.
It's interesting to look at that. And then there's the Saska version, which, I mean, let's give it some credit. It's still running on VOD. It's still a very new movie. IMDb currently has it sitting at 5.1 out of 10.
Oh, it needs to be higher than that.
And I think it should be a little higher than that as well. And the Rotten Tomatoes score has it at a 54% critic score currently and a 38 audience score.
And I see, that's ridiculous.
I, for the most part, think it is a better movie.
It is a better movie.
I would agree. And this is
feels like the Suspiria thing all over again, people just don't want a remake, so they shit on it.
Yeah.
And I think the new Suspiria, much like this movie, is a superior movie.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, I know you like that old movie, and that's great. Bully for you. But you have to acknowledge at some points, doesn't matter what movie, I can find the best movie ever made, and you can always find a problem with it.
Yeah.
You can't tell me that there isn't problems with every single movie ever made. You can't.
You can't. And we point that out all the time.
Yeah.
And folks, you can trust us. We've watched a lot of remakes.
Oh, a lot.
And we know when a remake is on par or possibly even better than the original. Just saying.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, look at John Carpenter films. Almost every one of his movies got shat on at the beginning. And it was just time that turned them into cult classics and people realizing that they're actually pretty good movies.
Well, yeah.
And I think that still goes on in horror. I think at some point people will start realizing, hey, that new Suspiria is actually a really well-made movie and we need to give it a little more reverence. And that could happen with this one as well. I think people will be honest with the faults of this movie, but I mean, there are things that have turned into cult classics that aren't perfect either.
Absolutely. And the reason some of them are cult classics, you like them for their flaws.
Mm-hmm.
But you can like a movie for its flaws, and that's fine. But never mistake when somebody's made a movie, a remake of it, and it's good, that it's somehow bad because the flawed version you loved isn't it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can love a flawed thing, but don't hate the new thing just because it's not as flawed in the same way.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there are lots of flaws in the Cronenberg movie. Yeah. It's a really raw, cheaply made, poorly acted film. But it's still enjoyable.
Oh, yeah. There's no question. It's a fun watch, and it tells a great story.
Yeah.
And there's some good, I don't know, I think there were some like good performances. Like, what was the name of the guy who had the baby? He was up with the baby at night.
Mm.
The older guy, that whole scene. I love that.
Yeah.
Murray. I was like sitting there going, oh, that's just a nice scene. Like, you don't need to do much with it, but he totally makes that one shine. Him and this tiny little human, he's awesome. And then there's a callback to it where they don't shy away of what happened.
Yeah, because he goes away to help his friend, and
that bad was things terrible. Happen
while he's away.
Yes, and that's what makes it such a great horror, is these horrific moments throughout the film. In terms of the story, it's not... I'd say the Saska Sisters version is more cohesive.
Yes.
Mm.
In terms of overall story and finding that one character that you sort of connect to.
I think they do well of showing in kind of an action horror moment, but are less successful than Cronenberg, because like that Murray scene's a perfect example of, here we're setting up this person who's a caring father, cares about his family, and the inevitable horror that happens later is that much more tragic.
Yes.
And shows us a lot less.
Yes.
Like, it's just, that was a horrific moment, and I'm kind of glad they didn't want to do it in this remake.
And he gives it time to breathe and set it up, so it's in the back of your brain. You start caring about this character, and horrible things happen.
When
later.
He walks into the house, you start holding your breath because you know.
Yeah, you're reminded. It's like, oh, God, he's not going to do that, is he?
Yeah, he just spent. Last time we saw him. Yeah, exactly. Last time we saw this guy who was holding a tiny, cute little baby. Oh, no.
Yeah.
I do want to talk about something in the original that really bugged me. And I don't know if you guys were bothered by it as well, but there's a scene where Hart and Murray are driving back to the hospital, and they're driving And they're driving. Like, he went to that shot like 3 times.
Yes.
And Hart's just sort of sitting, you know, holding his coffee cup, gazing lovingly at Murray.
Thank you. Yes. I did notice that. And I was trying to justify it in my head every time. And all I could come up with was, well, you know, sometimes when in the olden days, like, because he doesn't have a seatbelt on either. I'd be like, in a car, it's a big car. And just like some sort of sitting to the side with your back on the door is sometimes comfy. And that's all I could come up with.
Yeah, but there's that like little grin.
I think he's got such a beautiful face. No matter who he's looking at, he does look like he's looking at them lovingly.
That could be it.
He's just like, this man brought me Tim Hortons coffee.
Yeah. But like, he's such a pretty guy. And the thing is, it's startling when he turns to the side. His eyelashes are just so vibrantly there. And I'm like going, I don't know what it is about you, but like, it's like, I think no matter where he's looking, he could be looking at the dash. It'll be looking like he's looking at it lovingly.
Yeah. Well, and it just really reinforced the oddness of that relationship between Hart and Murray.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know how they got so close.
And exactly. And that was
it. Yeah. It was weird because he's an investor in the clinic. Yeah. And I was like,
they didn't know each other before.
Yeah. But it feels like they did.
Yeah.
But they didn't. I mean, there's a long period of recovery that's happening there at that time. So you get the feeling that they've been there at this clinic for a while.
Murray does give Hart a ride back to Montreal when Hart's released.
True.
And obviously something sort of developed there in terms of friendship, but pieces were missing there.
Yeah, given the short nature of the film, that's one of those things that feels a bit jarring. It's like, well, wait, where did this relationship come from? But it's because we don't get a good sense of time. And that kind of happens occasionally in the Saskas one, too, where she's hospitalized and then she's out and living with Chelsea. And we don't even know how long she'd been in the hospital.
Yeah.
So, you know, in the original film, like, okay, we know Rose was in a coma for quite some time.
Yes. And there's the scenes with Hart fixing the motorcycle.
And we see his recovery because we see he doesn't have use of his one arm for a while. And then as the movie progresses, he's working again and he's out of that cast and restraints.
And that's partly the way they told stories in the 70s, right, is they tried to sort of reinforce that passage of time. Mm-hmm. That seemed to happen less in modern filmmaking where they do that. Right?
Yeah, I think they just assume. I think they just assume the audience is going to realize this isn't going to be an overnight thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they do it in dialogue. They're like, you're going to be here for a very long while until we could even think of doing reconstruction.
Yeah.
So you know. It's.
They just said. Yeah. It's been a long while.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. So they use that time that they save showing us to better effect later on in the film or to give you a better sense of the pacing.
Yeah, and that's the one thing I appreciate about the Saskas is we get to spend more time with Rose.
Yeah.
And ultimately that really helped with Laura Vandervoort, who I don't think her acting chops have been shown to this degree before. And
really
I think
this
type of movie will lead to better roles for her, for sure.
I certainly hope so, because she was really strong.
Yeah, she was.
And honestly, that was one of the most compelling stories. I think that's also the problem with, like, the Cronenberg one, is, like, maybe, you cast Marilyn Chambers, but wouldn't it have been interesting? Like, she sort of, like, dives into this whole thing. It's like, oh, yeah, this thing comes out of my arm, and it sucks blood out of people, and she's just sort of cool with it. But in this one, in the Saska sisters one, she's struggling with it like a normal human would.
Well, in Cronenberg, she's just in denial of it mostly, right? Until that first scene where her friend won't let her out of the apartment, and she's like, no, it can't be you, I don't want it to be you. And it ends up being her anyhow.
Yeah,
right. But that's the first time she actually acknowledges what she's doing.
Yeah, because the hunger there's, I think there's a at least a period of time where she can make choices before the hunger completely takes control of her.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I think she's still making choices, but it's sort of like she's just very visceral in that moment. Like, I don't think she's unconscious when she makes some of these choices. She's just at such a visceral, hungry state.
Yeah, she goes to a porn theater because,
that's where you're going to find food.
You're going to find food and sleazy people that nobody's going to miss.
Yes,
right? Where else are you going to go?
So, I think the Saska sisters did a great job of showing conflict throughout the whole movie versus, again, Cronenberg's version doesn't really show that at all. He just sort of suggests that she doesn't really remember what she did until near the end at that one moment. Right? Mm-hmm. And then, even then, afterwards, Hart talks to her and she's in denial again. Well, I'm not the carrier. I can't be the carrier. Well, yes, you can. You know what you're doing. So why are you in such denial? And there's a naivete about Rose in Cronenberg's, like, she's very innocent and wispy, and whereas our Rose in the Saska version is she transitions from being sort of the meek Rose from the original to this strong, powerful character. And we've talked about sort of the four versions of Rose that we get to see in the Saskia version.
Well, I mean, she's also more of a fully formed character. I know who she is. I know what her history is. She's got a lot of emotional baggage.
You know what her goals are. She wants to be a designer.
Exactly. She's not a mystery. Like, Rose in the Cronenberg one is just sort of, again, maybe it's a point where you wanted to do it that way. She's just simply a carrier.
Well, that seems like a 60s...
She's a device. She's not a thing that's part of the story.
That feels like a 60s, 70s way of telling a story. Sometimes it's the audience is the quiet observer. And we don't always get to see into the character, and we just have to accept what we're seeing, and modern storytelling kind of demands more of us now. And in a way, I feel like the old way does demand for us to fill in those gaps, but if you can't attach to the character, you don't tend to care about them that much.
No, I was more attached to Hart. That's who... And I think that was where the movie was leading us most of the time. You spent a lot of time with him talking and discussing things with people. With her, not so much.
No, not at all. I mean, she's, for the most part, I think when we start seeing a little bit of her personality is when she finally gets to her friend's place.
Oh, yeah. That's the first time.
Yeah. And that's a way late in the film.
2/3 of the way into the film, at least.
Yeah.
It's about an hour.
Yeah.
And it's an hour and a half.
So it's a long time to get any kind of character development.
Ooh, did we think about what the okay, when you were playing the trailer, did we think about an answer to my question about what happens when you use pit stick on the peeing?
You're using pit stick on a underarm tentacle.
All of a sudden, your arm is going.
Like what happens? Is it just a freshly scented tentacle, or is it going to be weird about it? Or if you use the spray stuff, does it choke? I don't know what happens.
Yes. Does your armpit puke?
If you're using the old stuff that leaves a white trail.
Does it sneeze? Yeah.
Oh my god, that would, you know what that would have been a funny note, is if she was using, like, she didn't have enough money to buy, like, good pit stick, so she had, like, the old stuff that left a little bit of a tone, and they found it on, like, one of the victims. They're like, going, it's deodorant stick, I don't know what this is doing in the wound.
It would be 1977, they didn't have the good kind yet.
Exactly.
Eventually it just builds up and blocks the thing.
Oh, there we go.
It starves and dies.
Exactly.
Yeah, it would be, like, secret. It would be, like, your choice in 1977.
Maybe, oh my god, maybe that would be the solution to the whole thing. Saskia Sisters, can you do an ad for secret pit stick for weird symbiotic creatures?
Old Spice Monster.
Exactly. It's secret pit stick.
It's right on the package, the Old Spice package, but instead of like the ship, it's like got tentacles trying to pull it under the water.
Yeah, nice. Almost like a Kraken kind of thing. Kraken. Yeah.
Or at least the Kraken.
Oh, or it's
a fresh scent.
It's an Old Spice package, but it's actual spices. So like the creature just gets like weird Indian food. Like it's just, it's like really spicy, and the whole thing is like, ah, water.
It's like putting flavoring on your popcorn at the movie theater.
Yeah. Just like splash it at it.
Yeah, it's like, okay, I'm going to feed, but I'm going to throw a little ketchup dosing in there.
There you go. You're just feeding the little creature different things.
Oh, the places will go. Oh, the places will go.
All right, I think that is it for Rabid as part of our salute to women in horror as far as the final 2 weeks of February. Last month we did a whole month, but we thought, you know, we wanted to get some Valentine's Day stuff in.
Yes.
So we shortened it up for 2 weeks.
We did it.
And, you know, it doesn't feel that like it was that long ago where we did like 6 weeks of in October and beyond that we did a ton of horror. So we shortened it up this month, but we got another Women in Horror for you next week where we get to remake something.
Yay. Yeah,
that we haven't even decided on yet.
I have.
I know you have already, yes.
I know what you want, but it's not going to happen.
No, you know what? You made good points about that. But I am going to say we mentioned it in this episode with the one that I suggested.
Yes, we did.
But Jay is right about why we're not doing it.
Yeah, nice. Because you don't know what it is.
If you do, congratulations.
Most and
you
Canadians should, don't either.
Oh my god, well that should be the new test. This is the quiz, if you know which one it was that we mentioned in this episode.
But never say never. You know, things happen. We might slip it in down the road. Who knows?
I mean, it may even be next year because there aren't that many movies that are in a remakeable status for us that are feature female directors in horror. Mm-hmm. Right? So by attrition, we may have to.
And watch our social media. We are a ton of different places. We are at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and Invasion of the Remake at gmail.com. I doubt we'll open a TikTok, but you never know. But watch for an announcement. We are looking at maybe getting a Patreon going with some new content that will go there, as well as maybe early access to these episodes. So keep your eyes peeled for that announcement when it's ready to go.
Woohoo!
Yeah. And we'll make we'll make it worth your while for sure. We got some ideas, so they're going to be the new content that's going to be over there is going to be new and experimental and a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's like the club in this movie. You'll be like special feature. You'll be entered into the club without having to be on the
You're on
the guest list. It won't be somebody going like Rose.
Did you see Ross?
So we're not there yet, but again, watch the social media for those announcements and make sure you spread the word and tell your friends and family to help them get their
earballs
on the show. Just hit up our social media for links to our link tree. We're, like I said, a ton of different places. At this point, you're getting tired of me rattling them all off, so don't worry about it. You can find it. Just spread the word and make sure you leave a short review and rating on your favorite podcatcher and Apple Podcasts. And if you're listening to us on YouTube, make sure you subscribe and ding that bell for notifications so you don't miss a single episode.
No, we're going to spread like rabid.
Yes, we're going to spread like a virus until we're an epidemic on those earballs.
Yes.
Yes, much slower.
But it's going to be a nice epidemic. It won't be like this.
That's right. It'll be symbiotic.
And you won't get this like horrible hunger, maybe for more episodes, but it'll be fine.
And hopefully. All right, that's it for rabids. I'm getting a little hungry.
I know, right?
The hunger storm is starting.
I should have recorded my gut this morning.
One of these days, just do it and we'll drop it somewhere.
I've been Jason.
I'm always Sam.
And I continue to be Trish.
And we are out of here.
Transhumanism. The belief or theory that the human race can evolve beyond its current physical and mental limitations, especially by means of science and technology.
The term transhumanism originated in a paper from Canadian philosopher W.D. Lightfall in 1940. In 1957, biologist Julian Huxley would use the same as the title for his own paper on the subject and go on to be known as the founder of the movement. He theorized that the human species can, if it wishes, transcend itself, not just sporadically, an individual here in one way, an individual there in another way, but in its entirety, as humanity. Despite the clear benefits of the movement, FDA restrictions threatened to eliminate any advancements. The Burroughs Clinic found an opportunity within the challenge. In exchange for minimal blood work, families involved in the Burroughs tests were supplied with a lifetime of complete medical coverage, with opportunities for special cases to experience medical breakthroughs that are currently unavailable to the public. We look forward to hearing from you.